Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassami. The Kala Chakra keeps moving on. The wheel of time is rolling on. It's a new year. So some people might be thinking of making New Year's resolutions. One thing that might be good instead of thinking towards the future is just to think over the past year, think of something good that you did or something you succeeded at, and just recollect that. Because so often we're always looking forward, and we don't look backwards. We look at where we've been. Always looking ahead, always looking where we're going. But sometimes it's good to turn around, look at where we've been, the successes, something good that we did, maybe something good that we did for someone else. It's always good to recollect that. Can tend to be a bit hard on ourselves, especially in the West, especially in the United States. We can be hard on ourselves, focus on what we've done wrong, how we've messed up in the past. So we might feel guilty because of that. And it's kind of funny in Thailand, they've adopted the word guilty. I say guilty. I feel guilty. I said, no, you don't feel guilty. You don't know what that is. So we don't want to don't focus on what you feel guilty about, but let's see what you did. That was boon, that was good. Focus on the punya, the good karma, the generosity that we've cultivated over the past year, 2015. So then that, whatever that can inform, whatever resolutions that we might make looking towards the next year. So there's all sorts of Dhamma themes we can be thinking of to gladden the mind or brighten the mind. For us in the monastic community, we're looking towards the winter retreat. Very much looking forward to that. It's been a busy year. I've been building the reception hall, so. A lot of good has come from that. I think even if a comet was to come down and blow up the whole world, then and the reception hall never gets finished, then it's not a big deal because a lot of people have already cultivated a lot of generosity, and that's really what it's all about. It's not about getting a building done. But a lot of people have already come together to give for that. So that generosity has been cultivated. People have been having various people who are here tonight have held fundraisers over the past year, and a lot of donations have been given. A lot of money has been offered, and so the the community here can exist, that we're here because of the generosity of the lay people. So for us, that's a good reflection. It's that everything we have, it's one of the reflections that we do. My very life is sustained through the gifts of others. So how are we spending our time? How am I spending my time? It's like everything we have, everything we're able to do in as monks just comes from the generosity of the lay people, from the new reception hall, which is like a multi-million dollar building, down to the food that we eat each day, down to, even the tea that we drink, then all that is generosity. All that's offered, freely given. So although we have an abundance of things here that have been offered, still to respect, cultivate respect for offerings, respect for the people who offer. That's an important resolution to make, is a resolution of respect. Respect for offerings, respect for generosity, gratitude, respect for parents, respect for people who are selfless and give us all sorts of good things, allow us to be here. So that maybe that's one good thing to cultivate, is respect for parents, or an acknowledgement, a gratitude. The Buddha said that one who is thankful is hard to find in this world. So just cultivating respect and thankfulness. And that has to be cultivated. All these things need to be cultivated. They don't just happen automatically. So even things like compassion or loving kindness need to be cultivated. Gratitude needs to be cultivated. So like Katanyu Katawedi, which is translated as gratitude. Katanyu Katawedi. That needs to be brought up in the mind and cultivated. So when we give rise to these things, when we cultivate respect, or we recollect people who have done good to us, then that gives rise to katanyu katawedi, or gratitude. And that's what we call bhavana. So what does bhavana mean? Bhavana means bringing into being. So any quality that we have that we bring into being, such as katanyu katawedi, if it wasn't there before and then it's there, then we've partaken in what we call bhavana. So that's practice. Anything we want to bring into being, we have to bhavana it, so that we make it manifest, bring it into being. That's also one part of right effort, or it's part of the Noble Eightfold Path. So Samma Vayama is right effort. Right effort, Samma Vayama. So one part of it is to wholesome qualities that aren't yet manifest, to cultivate them and make them manifest. Think in Thai, it's sing kuson ti yang mai mi hai gurkun mi. So it's like wholesome qualities that we don't yet have. We bring them into being or cause them to arise. And then there's wholesome qualities that we have already, and we sustain them. We do what we can to maintain them, make them not disappear. So there's what we call like bringing into being is the first part of right effort, and then sustaining. Can't remember how to say that in Thai. It's been too long since I was in Thailand. Too long since I did the chanting at Wat Pa Phong. Then there's the unwholesome qualities that that's akusala tama, the unwholesome qualities unwholesome qualities that exist in the heart. Then we abandon them. We try to eradicate them. So we see what's unwholesome. So, for example, like stinginess or the ability to not be patient. There's patient endurance, which we call Kanti Barami or Kwam Oton. And then there's also Kwam Mai Oton. There's like non-patience. So we try to abandon things like that, laziness and the five hindrances. So ill will, restlessness, and so on. So we abandon those. Singti akuson, and we do what we can to relinquish that. So that's the first part of right effort is bringing into being. The second part is sustaining. The third part is abandoning or relinquishing, and then the fourth is restraining. So unwholesome qualities that haven't yet arisen, we keep them from arising. We do whatever we can to make them not arise. We put ourselves in whatever situations we can to make them not arise. The Buddha said that the very best thing to cultivate those four right efforts is good friendship, which is kalyanamitta. So why is it that being with a good friend is good? Why is it a good thing? It's, one can be expected to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path if you have a good friend. And the Buddha called himself Kalyanamitta. He said that's what he is. He's the ultimate good friend for people. So respect, the four right efforts, Kalyanamitta, and Barami, we can determine to cultivate Barami in the new year. It's something we can give rise to, all sorts of spiritual qualities. It's also good to try to get to a place where we don't worry about anything. That's really important. So like that's one theme that when Lungpa Liam was visiting last July, one theme that he kept coming back to over and over again was that like when you do things that are unwholesome, then there's inevitably a worry that comes up, and when you cultivate the wholesome, then there's nothing to worry about. There's no worries. And when you cultivate sila, when you have Sila Samadhipanya, but starting with Sila. So like whether it's the five precepts, the eight precepts, the 10 or the 227, when you're cultivating Sila, then there's nothing to worry about. So you have like a protection. I think he was saying like mua mi sin mai we talk gung won. Arai. Like there's nothing to worry about when there's sila. That doesn't mean we don't think about the future. So we still have to think about the future and plan, but there's nothing to worry about. We don't need to worry about anything. Actually, when you see the drawback of things like worry or getting upset, you see the drawbacks of that. It's actually you start to see that nothing is worth clinging to, nothing is worth getting upset over, nothing is worth worrying about. So that's a good place to try to get to, try to aim for. And we might read some teachings of the Buddha or teachings of Lungpo Cha, and it'll give rise to what we call Dhamma Piti. So it's like a feeling of joy or inspiration connected with the Dhamma. And that's also an important thing to make much of or give importance to, because that's it's good to be moved by the Dhamma. And depending on how wholesome the mind is or what state our bhavana is in, when we read a Dhamma teaching or hear a Dhamma teaching, then you know, we might listen with various different modes or ways of listening. So the Dhamma for us, it might just be a passing curiosity. Some people might listen to the Dhamma in that way. It's kind of interesting, but it's kind of maybe doesn't apply to me so much. Or we might listen with an intellectual inclination. So like wanting to catalog various types of Dhamma in our mind, memorize and catalog, but there's still a disconnect. It's still not brought inward. It's still not openaiko, which is, it still hasn't been internalized or brought inward. But there might be an intellectual fascination with the Dhamma teaching. Or when we hear Dhamma or read Dhamma, then we might have some Dhamma piti arise. And that's what happens when the heart is moved by the Dhamma. So when it might be experienced as like a burning sensation in the heart center, like a burning sensation of like a blissful burning sensation in the chest, and that's something we don't forget. That's something we remember. Or it might be just like a very you might experience Dhamma Piti as like a very cool, peaceful, collected state of mind where a deep sense of inspiration starts to come up, and we make a firm, personal, internal determination to practice no matter what anyone else says, no matter what anyone else thinks of us. We determine deep down inside, no matter what, we're going to practice. No matter what, we're going to make progress in the Noble Eightfold Path. So that's one possibility that might happen when we read a teaching or listen to a teaching. So I remember the first Dhamma talk I ever heard here was Ajahn Amaro, and he gave a talk about the Buddha's parinibbana. So he's talking about how the Buddha is on his deathbed. He's under the twin sal trees. There's flowers raining down, celestial music, billions of devatas and all sorts of celestial beings surrounding the Buddha. There's all of his disciples and lay disciples coming from all around to pay their last respects. And the Buddha says, I think it's to Ananda. He says, do you see all this people paying their last respects to the Tathagata? The flowers raining down, celestial music, and all these unbelievable offerings being given to the Tathagata. And he says, of course, yeah, yes, you see them. And the Buddha says, well, anybody who wants to give me the supreme offering, they should practice and realize the Noble Eightfold Path. And that's the supreme offering. So anyone, even after the Tathagata passes away, it doesn't matter what period of time, the supreme offering is to put the Noble Eightfold Path into practice. So that's what we call Patipati Puja. We make an offering of our practice. And that's a good thing to do, because if we do something for ourselves, like if we make food for ourselves, for example, it might just be like we might heat up some noodles in the microwave or something, or like if you're in Thailand, you might just like get some mama and like put them in a cup and eat them if it's for yourself. But say if you're making from some food for your teacher, you're not going to give them mama. You're not going to give them, you know, some cheap instant noodles. You're going to go out and make something good for them, offer it to them. Same with our practice. Depending on our temperament, we might have some sort of not view ourselves in such a good light, or not think we're worthy of something so good. So if we practice just for ourselves, then maybe it's not going to be so good. But if we practice for our teacher, we practice for the Buddha as an offering, then maybe the practice will be better. Practice will be higher quality than if we just did it for ourselves. So Patipati Puja, make an offering of our practice. Yeah, dedicate it to something higher than ourselves. So there's also Kanti Barami, patient endurance, Kwam Oton. That's something that's really important to determine for the new year. It's just it's like the saying, like the patient person is always happy. If you notice, like if you're impatient, or if you know somebody who's always impatient, then there's always a sense of dissatisfaction there. The patient person is always happy. And there's a Steinbeck, I think it's a Steinbeck story of, it's a, like a depiction of the workers, like the grape pickers. I think it's the Mexican grape pickers in the 1920s. And there's just a little kind of image he paints of them. They're done with work for the day, and the friend is supposed to pick them up, give them a ride home. But he just says he's going to come get them at the end of the day, and so they're waiting, and waiting on the side of the road. You know, tired, want to get home. Friend doesn't show up, car doesn't show up, so they're still just waiting there. It's 5 p.m., 6 p.m., 7 p.m., it's getting late, car doesn't show up, but they're just waiting. There's nowhere to go, nothing to do. Gets dark, car doesn't show up, just lie down on the side of the road and go to sleep and wait till morning. But there's no sense of being impatient. There's no sense of, you know, irritation or anger that the ride's not showing up. It's just okay. Car didn't show up, just lie down and go to sleep. It's not a big deal. I always thought the people in the Isan had so much oton, so much patient endurance. I remember in a few years ago, having a katina at Pujum Gom in Ubon, and it's this kind of remote branch monastery of Wat Nanachat. It's kind of like a retreat monastery for Nanachat monks, and it's got like a lot of rocks and it's scrubby little trees, but it's a kind of like very rough terrain. And the katina ceremony was in early November, so it's cold, coming into the cold season, and the cold season there, you got the winds coming down from China and Mongolia, so it can get a little bit cold. And we had normally in Thailand, you have a katina, you have all night Dhamma talks, and so we're having these all night Dhamma talks. And the first talk was Tanajan Kampan. I don't know if he's ever been to the West, but he's a senior disciple of Lungpo Cha. And then the second talk was going to be an Ajahn named Ajahn Tawin, who's got a monastery kind of close to Pujum Gom. And Tanajan Kampan is known for giving like long talks. So remember Ajahn Tawin showed up at midnight because he was invited to come give a talk, and so he showed up at midnight and he saw that Lungpo Kampan was on the tamat, on the Dhamma seat. He thought, okay, he's going to be talking for a while, so Ajahn Tawin, I watched him just go over on these like rocks where it's really rough and uneven, and he just laid down on the rocks and fell asleep. It's like, okay, he's going to be talking for a while, and my talk's probably not going to start for a few hours, and I'll just go sleep on these rocks over here. Thought the Isan people are really good at sleeping on anywhere. They can sleep anywhere. So he just pulled his robe over himself and went to sleep on these rocks, and it was kind of like a lot of people were walking around too, like going around him. It was kind of near the pathway. And then around about 4 a.m., Lungpo Kampan talked from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. It's a 7-hour Dhamma talk. And then, or maybe just before 4 a.m., he kind of ended. And then I looked over to see if Ajahn Tawin was going to wake up. And sure enough, the robes kind of started moving, and then he got up, put his robe on, and got right up on the seat and just started talking, and talked till 5:30. And so there was only the all-night talks was two Dhamma talks. And then we had our morning alms round. So like Auton, sometimes we see like patient endurance is something unpleasant. It's like, okay, we have to learn how to put up with things and just wait till they're over. But so we might see patient endurance as like a form of suffering or misery, but patient endurance is great happiness. So it's like quam oton mai chai tu tijing ben suk. So in reality, it's happiness. It's not suffering. Oton mai chai tu go ben suk. So there's like Oton, if we look at that word too, that's it's two parts. Ot is like to go without, and ton is like to endure. So there is a sense of being willing to go without. Being willing to go without. During the winter retreat, people at Abhayagiri might take on various practices or resolutions. We call them dutangas. Some people might keep the one sitting practice, which is where you don't eat the breakfast, but you just have the one meal, or eat at one sitting. Some people might take on the only bowl eater's practice, so you just eat out of the bowl, not out of any extra dishes. Some people might do sitter's practice for a shorter or longer period of time, maybe part or all of the winter retreat. So that's where one gives up the posture of lying down. And that's like ought, that's going without, learning how to be content, be happy with going without. Also, we'll be going without speech, learning how to go without speech, learning how to go without interaction. So cultivating solitude. How do we do when there's nothing happening, no interaction, no hanging out with friends? So during the winter retreat, there's going to be periods that are very open, where we're just left to our own devices, we're just on our own. So how do we do when we're on our own, when we're by ourselves? Who are we when we're by ourselves, when nobody's there to tell us who we are? It's just us. It's just us and whatever thoughts in relation to ourselves that we have. So that's like ought. That's learning how to go without. And ton is like to endure, so to endure various mental states. Sometimes it's unpleasant just to be with ourselves, so we're always, you know, seeking some sort of distraction, seeking some sort of pleasure, some sort of contact, some sort of conversation. Always going out. Can't remember who it was. I think it's anyway, some Kruba Ajahn. It's like somebody asked him. Might have been either Ajahn Tate or Lungpo Dun. It's like somebody asked him, like, it seems impossible. Like, how do you is Nibbana even possible, or how? How do you even, how does this practice even work? And they said, just don't go out. Just don't go out. So we just stay in. When we bhavana, when we practice, we learn how to stay in. And not going out, not flowing out. And collecting. So one way to think of how the citta works, or the mind, the citta, the jit-jai, one way to think of how that works is we're always like fragmenting our citta. We're always like breaking it apart and putting it places. And so it's not ekagata. It's not one. It's not collected. It's not one-pointed. I like to think of ekagata like the citta isn't fragmented all over the place. So like if we're thinking of various things, like maybe the example of like I'm thinking of this, you know, three work projects, and I'm thinking of two people, and so the citta is fragmented in those five different places, and there's little pieces of the citta in those different places, and so we bring it in, we bring it back in, we collect it, so it's ekagata, that's one-pointed, and when we keep it in, we keep it in the body. Normally the citta is jumping all over the place, and that's what we call in Thai fung san. Most common Dhamma question in Thai is, how do I not be fung san? How do I not be all over the place? You know? Or in Pali, udacha kukucha. How do I not be udacha kukucha? Like worried about this and that. So it's like seeing like where the citta is. Like it's like for myself, I'm trying to tie up all these practical work projects before the winter retreat. So the citta is like, okay, I have to finish building that thing and have to do that map and have to make that thing, so the citta is fragmented between those things. So preparing to collect it in, getting to a point of like not going out to those things. And so then that takes sati, or like we remind ourselves, we recollect, so just mindfulness, just to know what's happening. Know that the citta is fragmented in that way, and that we have to bring it back in. Or like, you know, just right now, like looking at oneself right now, like where's the citta, where's the mind jumping off to? So is it like it could be thinking of anything. It could be thinking of school. It could be thinking of friends. It could be thinking of work. It could be thinking of anything. So that's trying to use sati, trying to use mindfulness to bring it back to the body, just sensations in the body, just here now. So the body's always in the present moment, so we can just bring it back into the present. One quality of ot, which is like going without, too, one quality of that too is like just being willing to go without things that we aren't going to get anyway. So like the desire mind is always holding this bait in front of us, like we're going to move out and try to get something, but then we never really get what we're actually desiring. What we get is something other than the desire. And so like just that idea of just going without the desire, being able to go without the desire, it's just so much better than having the desire, just being able to relinquish desire. That's an interesting reflection, that even if we get what we desire, then that thing isn't the same thing as the desire. What we're actually following, what's actually making us run back and forth, run around, is the desire itself. So tanha, like bratsachak kilate tanha. That's a good aditan for bhimai for the new year. But also good to keep coming back to good things that we've done. So offerings we may have made to the Sangha, just recollecting good things that we've done the past year, and giving rise to a sense of joy and contentment in piti sukha. So that's just so important for having a sense of stability in the present moment, so that we do feel comfortable bringing the mind back into the body and bringing the mind to ekagata, which is a necessary factor for our meditation. And then we remember to bhavana various things like katanyu katavati. So katanyu katavati is like that's what we call kusala, something wholesome that we bring into being. Remembering people who have helped us in the past, helped us, done good for us, people like our parents is the supreme example of that. And then from a place of katanyu katavati, then we offer up our patipati puja, just whatever practice we do, we give that as an offering, and share the merit either with our teachers or our parents. Another good thing to think about is just the fact that the teaching of the optimum human rebirth. So like, guess how would you say that in Thai? Like, Gert ma bin manut bin sing ti yot yim sing ti suit yot. It's, I guess you could say in English, like the awesome human rebirth, the great human rebirth. That's just to give importance to the human rebirth. We haven't been reborn as animals or celestial beings. We've been reborn as humans. So it's like, I remember talking one time with Heath Garman. It's someone who does the... like a heavy earth work or heavy excavator work for us. He's been working with us since the monastery opened. And we were talking about, like somehow we're driving up the hill together and talking about the topic of suicide and how, what would drive people to commit suicide? And he was just saying, I don't see how anybody could commit suicide. Life is just so awesome. You know, how could people commit suicide? And he's someone who has a really good life. Not everyone has that. Some people have blessings, have a good life, but not everyone is blessed that way. So if your life is at a point where you think life is awesome, then that's great. That's a good place to be. And then that's actually a really good place for Dhamma practice. Because the happy mind can practice. The happy mind is able to think, reflect on various types of Dhamma. The unhappy mind, the depressed mind, it's like, why is it depressed? Or what is it thinking about? What does it chew on? And think about it, it's always atta, it's always like the sense of self. And then people who have a lot of happiness, you might be really obsessed with yourself and get really proud and kind of happy when you think about yourself, but that's not the happiness we're talking about. This usually like in Heath's case, like it's connected with family, so it's like living righteously and raising a family. Or like happiness in terms of a monk, it would be like service, like being able to do things for others. That's so getting to that point where that's an important factor for being able to meditate, being able to concentrate, is getting to the point where life is awesome. So make it good. Make your life good. Make your life awesome. That's what you have to do. That's practice. That's Dhamma practice. Let us not just wallow in our craving and desires and attachments, and wallow in our sense of self and woe is me. But let's make it good, make it awesome. But to do that, we have to have patient endurance. We have to have sati. Have to have sila. Have to have sangwara, seen sangwon. That's like the higher virtue, which is sense restraint. And it's like how happy do we want to be, and we take that however happy we want to be, we'll take that level and see, okay, well, what did the Buddha say that how we get there? So if we want to be just regular happy, we can keep sila. If we want to be really happy, we can cultivate otton, we can cultivate patient endurance, kanti barami. If we want to be really, really happy, we can step up to sense restraint, seeing sangwon. So not so much is coming up in my mind to talk about on New Year's Eve, but these are kind of just a few ideas coming up. Just gratitude, thankfulness, katanyu katawedi, patient endurance, oton, sense restraint, just a willingness to make it good, make it great, make use of this optimum human rebirth in the best possible way that we can, as the old year passes, as the Kala Chakra rolls on, and the new year comes into being. So I'll leave that. I think that's enough. Om Mayam Dhammakataya Sadhukaram Kadamase.